Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, I've got another great guest on the podcast who sums up this word, continues to learn, continues to grow. And her name is Amanda Russell. Amanda, how you doing?
Wonderful. I'm great to be here. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to this interview.
Yeah, so we're talking today on April 9th, and you know, we're all right in the thick of the coronavirus. It's affected the entire planet. A lot of times these things has happened to certain regions. You know, a tornado blows through, but this is a major tornado, you know, taking place and wreaking havoc throughout the whole entire world. Started in China and made its way to the United States, New York, especially affected, and all the way out to California, and now, you know, making its way through the Midwest. And so this has been just an amazing time for people to reset, you know, themselves. You know, hopefully people can have that peace of mind to really understand that this is a time of opportunity to get calm, get quiet, and think about what they want to do, where they're at, where they want to go, and then do themselves a favor and write those goals down and figure it out. I want to get into that with you, but I want to give a little backup because you're one of the few that I've had on, which really, I think, mixes the brain and the beauty together to have created some really amazing things in the world of fitness and also in the world of modeling. And I want to kind of reset this to when you were growing up. I know you grew up in a small town. And how did somebody growing up in a small town in Canada, of all places, make their way into this big space down here in the U.S. and ultimately become successful in a lot of different ways, but also continuing to kind of reinvent yourself? So why don't we start back to where it all began?
Oh, the very beginning. Yes. The very beginning starts off in a small, no Starbucks town. And I say no Starbucks because you have to have a minimum average income requirement to have a Starbucks. This is fact for everybody watching this, because you can imagine some of the places you've seen Starbucks. But I grew up, and I never really left like a 3-hour square radius of my hometown. And the only world that I saw was through movies. And I remember thinking like there, especially whenever I watched a movie in New York City, I had to get there. I knew that there was like this bigger world, but had no, like, it's amazing when I look back and I see kids now that I, you know, nowadays, and I'm like, I just can't believe how tunnel vision the world was to me. It was literally like, that was the world. Like that was the whole world until I saw movies that I didn't know if it was real or fake. And it was my high school gym teacher who, she told me about this life-changing thing, this word, scholarship. And I had like never heard the word before. I didn't know what it meant. And she explained to me that it meant that you could go after high school, instead of going to work, you could actually continue to go to school and get another degree that will put you in a much higher paying job. And that the U.S., United States of America, would actually pay you to do it. You could do as long as you could do a sport. And, you know, my family didn't have a lot of money. My whole town really didn't have like that opportunity. So it wasn't like I could be a dancer, which I would have loved to be, or anything like that, because that all cost money. And it cost, it took resources. And it also took, which is very interesting, and I look at sports differently now, it took being seen. So when you look at sports like baseball or football or dance, these guys get seen, and it's slightly subjective in terms of like, you know, you have to be good enough for somebody to actually go visibly see you and determine that you're good enough. She told me that I should look at running because running was a sport that was, first of all, it was free. It required no equipment. And the time on track is a time on track anywhere in the world. And if I could run these certain times, I could write my ticket. And so I learned the times coming up that the U.S. girls 5,000 meters had to come to high school in order for to qualify for a full. And for me, it had to be full. It couldn't be like a partial or, you know, even like 99%. It was like it had to be complete. And my parents would only let me do it if it was Division I as well. So I found out those times, and I literally, my town has like a newspaper clippings from like how crazy I was, because so I became obsessed with the track and the times, and not because, and this is an important fact, this is not because I loved running. I actually hated it. I think it's miserable. I don't run anymore. And when I see people running, I'm like, they make it look even more painful. I don't understand why anyone would want to take that up. But, and I think that's an important point, because it's affected me in so many other ways, because I think there's a big mentality of like, oh, follow your passion. Well, first of all, if it was my passion, I would have given up weight. You know, if I followed that advice, I would never have done it, because it wasn't fun. It was a lot of work and there was a lot of obstacles. And so having gone through that, I thought after training like that and doing that for so many years in a sport that I really, at the end of the day, didn't love, and made me realize that there was probably nothing that I wouldn't do if I wanted the end goal. And so I did. I ended up developing. So that, I think that's the ultimate difference, right, between following your passion and being passionate about what you do.
Yep.
And as I started getting good, and it started becoming like an identity thing, then of course it was like, oh yes, I love running. And it became an entire identity. And I thought I decided to go further with it than I thought I would. I started off university very well, and I think I broke our conference record one of my first races, and then kind of progressed through. While I was still in college, I made automatic qualifying for Olympic trials my senior year, and that was when I came against a career-ending injury. I broke my femur in 2008, not too long before Beijing, and it was at that point that my whole life, I realized up to that point, was I was a runner and everybody doted around me because I was the lead person, and my school was paid for, and I had coaches, and I had a health team and all these things. And all of a sudden I had nothing. And I was also risking the idea that I didn't have, technically the way it works, as I'm sure you've known, that you have to compete under a coach that is your country, but my other professional life was here in the US. So my real coaches were American. And so I lost, so I was facing deportation as well. And I remember thinking like, what am I going to do now? I have been a runner all this time. Like, I thought this was going to be my future. And they told me that I would never run again, that I would actually never walk properly. So I...
How old are you now? Are you 21, 22?
I was 21.
Mm-hmm. You're 20 years old. Okay. So you're 21 years old. You're in the US. You're preparing to run in the Olympics. You've now broken your femur, which mm-hmm. means that the country that you're going to run for, which would have been Canada, you can no longer do. And since you're not working and actively pursuing that goal in the United States, they were going to deport you and ship you back to Canada.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So your head's spinning.
What do you do, right?
What do you do?
I love when people, I feel like I'm the go-to person for a lot of friends whenever crisis happens in their life, because you become very, very resourceful. When you've hit rock, when you hit failure, you don't have anything left, you become very, very resourceful and you find a way to do it. I'm a hustler in any way. And I remember I thought back, okay, well, if I can't go back to the pinnacle of what I feel like is the athletic world in running, the Olympics, then I still had this dream, which was really my dream, was New York City. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew that I just really, really wanted to live there and I wanted to grow a career there. And it was like the epicenter of my universe. And I had some challenges though. Well, many, four to stand out. One, I had no money, no connections, no work experience, and no U.S. visa. Perfect. So everyone thought I was like crazy, including, and I lost the support of my parents making that decision. But I felt like I already feel like I've lost everything. To go back home and live with my parents, feels like the ultimate failure. And so I would rather be, and I'm like literally thinking, I would rather be homeless, and it might come to that, in New York City, than go have to live with my parents. You know, I'm not married, I don't have kids. It's like, what have I got to lose? So that's when I knew I needed a visa to do it. Thank God I had finished my education. And one thing I did have was, you know, an undergraduate degree. And so I narrowed down like my sites to like four big consulting firms that were based in the city, and decided that I would try for them. And I think that's where I learned, like, okay, you can't compete on what you don't have. So I didn't have experience. And I knew that in order to get the job, it wasn't like I just had to be the best candidate for the job. To get sponsored with no experience, you have to prove that in some way you're better than every other American applying for the job. So one thing I did have a lot of, not money, but shoes. I had a lot of Nike running shoes because that was my sponsor. And so I sent a pair of used, worn out Nike running shoes to who I found out was the gatekeeper at each of these three firms, with this whole like personal spiel in a box about how I had all of this work ethic and dedication and perseverance that I could now give solely to your company because I was no longer going to run. And that got me the interview. And then from the, that got me all three interviews actually. And I ended up getting my number one choice ended up deciding to sponsor me on the spot on my final round interview. Because the senior VP wanted to see the girl who had sent the box and the shoes himself at my final presentation. So I got that, I got sponsored, and that was sort of my start to living in Manhattan.
So when you're talking about sponsoring, that means that American-based company is going to sponsor you in terms of employing you as a way of a work visa for you to remain in the US, correct?
Sorry, yes, correct.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. When you're an athlete, you're on an O visa, it's a talent visa.
Yep.
And then when you're working, you're not. There's a bunch of different visas. So, but I knew, and that's, there's a lot of like steps backwards. And I think that's why I disagree with, I see a lot of like, you know, I hear a lot of podcasts and I see a lot of motivational speakers talking about like, you know, just doing whatever it takes and you're just going for it and going for it. And yeah, I believe in risk, but I believe it has to be very calculated. And sometimes it doesn't mean just going for it. Sometimes it means you have to put a plan in place, because I had no safety net. So it wasn't like I could just go start my own business. So I started this company knowing that I didn't want to work there forever. I didn't want to work for somebody forever. But I knew it was a big white collar firm. I needed the visa. I needed the work experience. So my plan was, okay, work for a couple of years, go to business school. Business school requires at least 2 to 3 years work experience. I saved everything I possibly could when I was working. I was making pretty good money. But I could also write a book on probably like how to live on 20 bucks a day in New York, because I put everything away to just save up for my first semester of business school. And I thought, if I could just get one semester, I'll figure the rest out. And I know that I was going to use this time, because doing business school meant that I could full-time pursue something else while still maintaining a student visa now and in the city. It just meant that I couldn't work. So I'd have to find creative ways to work off the books. That was the beginning of my fitness business, because, you know, people say there's luck, but I don't really believe in luck. I believe that you make certain decisions that put you in certain positions. So, you know, you can call it luck, you can call it whatever it was, timing. But when I did, I made the leap, and I was scared as hell, and I quit my job and I started business school, and I didn't know what I was going to do after the first month. I sublet my own bedroom in my own apartment and shared a bed with a friend of mine who was in residency, because she had night shifts and I was day shifts. So we had this, that was like covering my, how I was living at the time in this scary place. And I started, so I made my business school project. I was a marketing major, and I made it the idea that you can have the best product or service in the world, but if you don't have an audience, it doesn't matter. And this was the infancy of when YouTube was very beginning. It was really had no respect. And I started watching these YouTubers, not because I loved the show, but because I was so enamored by how these people had these cult followings. And this was back when YouTube was like only just like Dumb and Dumb entertainment and a little bit of music. And you're seeing these like teenage kids or like these or young adults in the Midwest doing these ridiculous things, and they have this cult following. And that to me was like, oh my God, all of these brands are putting the cart before the horse, and they're creating these products and services. But if you can create an audience like that, they will tell you what they want, and you can, or you can sell them anything. So I decided to start a YouTube channel, and that was before cell phones took video. So I bought a flip cam and I started it in my New York apartment. And then I also, you know, and it could have, I say it was, it became fitness, but it could have been anything. It just happens to be what I was into. I did so much self rehab to get myself back that I started a whole other workout program that involved no running, but was able to get me in shape like a runner. And I started hosting these boot camps all over the city. So I would put up like coffee shop flyers everywhere. And I got a really good turnout. Well, one of the, I met a lot of people that way as well. And one of the guys that came to my class, actually, he'd be a great interview for you, Jesse Itzler. He wrote Living with a Navy SEAL, but really cool guy. He started Zico Coconut Water and a few other companies. But him, and then there was a CEO of an advertising agency that had come to my boot camp, and they were looking for a replacement for Molly Sims, who was at the time the spokesperson for Zico. And they just started doing my workouts, and that, you know, I should go to this casting. And I thought, there's no way. I remember very strictly my father was very, very strict, and he was a hockey player way back. And he was like, no way are you going to be a brainless wonder, and you're going to get an education, you're going to get a job. And like, I know what goes on. Like, no, you're never going to model. But at the time, like, it was really, really good money. And I was pretty backed against a wall. And I thought, this is easier than, because I was bartending off the books at night. So working the night shift and going to school all day was challenging. So I did, and I ended up taking over her contract and then signing as with Wilhelmina, which, and I became one of the very first fitness models in the, Wilhelmina opened the very first category in fitness. And when I say fitness, I don't mean like muscle and fitness, like how they've seen back in the day. Well, this was the first category in fitness that was like Cosmo magazine or Self magazine, very like lifestyle-y. So that became, and then I decided that every time I was on a shoot, I started feeling like they call you talent, and I hated that. And it made me feel very insecure. And I would try to hypercompensate by being like, no, but I'm in business school and I can, I'm going to have my own company, and started pitching all of these, every editor, every brand you could think of, and saying, you know, you guys are creating all this content. I can create the content for you. And that's how I sort of started my, what became my fitness subscription model. But also I started a digital agency that created online content and programming for, you know, all kinds of brands, from like the Rodale publications and Condé Nast to Livestrong.com, EverydayHealth.com. And so I had kind of like, people ask me what I did. I'm like, well, I had two companies. One was mine, which was, I was the face of, which I wanted out of, because I didn't want to be the face. But that's how it works when you build a business, you're starting with yourself. And I really wanted to be on the back end of this, but through it, I was able to build one of the very first online subscription models. And this was back before websites could be like a Wix site, or you could, it was very hard. Like, nothing was streamlined. It was extremely hard. I ended up partnering with the creators of The Biggest Loser, Trium Entertainment in LA, and they became my 50% business partner in my brand. And we together kind of were like weeding through this forest of trying to build a subscription model, because I had this cult following. But you don't own anything you do on YouTube. You don't own anything you do on social media. So how do you drive the audience to something you own? And that was my whole business model. And I've helped a lot of other companies do the same now. And that's what I created a course on. I created a, actually, it's becoming its own minor degree. So I created curriculum at UCLA first. Now I'm at University of Texas, and I'm working with the professor at Harvard. We're putting together this whole special certificate program that'll be kind of like a standard in the industry of marketing, because right now there's no standard. In law, there's a standard. In medicine, there's a standard. In accounting, there's a standard. But in marketing, there's no standard. Somebody can say, you know, they have a social media account, so they can do marketing. So we're working on that right now, which is kind of it's a big career shift. And that's why it's so confusing on the, when you said it, like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't even know how to explain right now, but I'm new to this. So this will be sort of the next phase. I know this is the next phase of what I'm doing right now.
Okay. So
long story for listening.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on here. So I think the point of the story is one of tenacity and one of ingenuity and one of creativity from the standpoint of you had basically no resources except your brain and your drive, which led you to going into this agency and pitching different people in a very creative way, not the traditional resume, send it in and hope, you know, for the best. And that led to interviews. You sold your way into why you'd be the best person. They hired you. You started to make some money, which then allowed you to go to business school. And so all these things have had connectors onto it. And I think the big message to me, at least, is that, and I say this a lot, which is about connection and about dominoes, reaction creating reaction. And, you know, nothing will ever happen if you don't go out in the world and swing the bat. And so you got to be at the plate, you got to be in the game, and you got to go after. And a lot of times what you go after may not be the right thing that actually works, but you're going to learn exactly from the right and the wrong and the mistakes that you've made. It sounds to me like two things have kind of happened. One, your career has evolved over time, certainly, but that's also had a impact on the technology that has also evolved over time, which has shifted your course and your focus just a little bit. You started this company, fitstrongandsexy.com, and so that was, I know that's not your main focus anymore, and you've now paired and merged together with a different company, valiofit.com. But a lot of what you do is, again, you're really good at being on camera, got a great presence, and doing all the different workouts that you do to bring people in, selling subscription. And you know, again, there's I always see everything as an opportunity. And going back to where we started the podcast, which is right now we're going through this COVID-19 crisis. And what is probably more popular than ever are all these home-baked Peloton type subscription services that are out there. And so in one sense, you're kind of ahead of your time in terms of selling these very convenient in-home classes that people could sign up for. Have you seen it that same way with, again, we're all social distancing as we speak today, April 9th. I don't know when this podcast is going to run. It's going to be in the near future. But, you know, like, as we all sit back, this morning I did I have a little app on my phone, and it's got some dude doing push-ups and sit-ups and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And I just follow. It's like my personal trainer. And that's essentially what you are. Have you seen that as any kind of a springboard to anything that beyond what you've been doing? I know you dreamt up of this, you know, a long time ago, but I know, like, are all roads kind of leading into one right now?
Yeah. So, you know, mine, like I always say, I choose fitness, but it could have been anything. And that's why the transfer into academia is so natural, because what I teach people, like, what do you, you're in business school and you teach fitness? Like, I don't get it. And I don't teach fitness at all. I teach how to build a business in the new economy, in the digital economy, and how to be adapted. The biggest problem with a lot of what I found in, and I came to this because it was a frustration in business school and then in life, the world is changing so fast and it's just getting faster and faster. And so you have to be agile, that you cannot teach anymore the way we used to teach. You cannot teach platform specific. That platform will change. Algorithms change daily. The way we do business is going to change daily. So you have to teach how to think, not a how to. And when you look at what big companies hiring, especially graduate students and undergraduates, their biggest complaint across corporate America is that they don't know how to critically think. There's no template. Business is not, it's not being a doctor. It's not surgery. You're not just recreating a template, like, here's where we do this X, Y, and Z. And if you think that way, and if you have to go to best practices all the time, then you're doing it wrong.
So let me ask you about that. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you. So I did a podcast with the NFL yesterday, And the audience is intended for former NFL players who are now transitioning out in like, okay, what am I going to do now? And so we have this discussion around how you shift that energy towards something that is new. And you're saying it in a really interesting way, which I love, which is about teaching people how to think. So I want to dive into that just a little bit. How do you do that when somebody has been down a certain path and thinks a certain way and has grown up in a certain society in small town Canada where there's only one Starbucks, right?
And no Starbucks.
There's no Starbucks, right? Because the town didn't have enough money. The question is, like, how do you teach people how to think when they've been conditioned in a certain way to react and think about certain things?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that I'll tell you one short example that changed my thinking forever on this. When I went through and I think a lot of people listening to this as athletes can resonate big time. When I went through the sort of, it was an identity crisis, I would definitely say, of like, oh my God, my world, now what? People always talk about how they came back from it, but they never really talk about like what they, like, you don't just bounce back. And I went through a period of sort of like, you know, I've always been a really high energy, optimistic person. And for the first time in my life, I was like situational depression where I just like didn't know what to do. Woe is me. And it was my dad who was like, you're not dead. You're acting like you're dead and you're not. You have all of this ambition and all of this energy and all of this drive that you can now, he's like, it's the universe telling you that you are supposed to do something different. And you know what, Amanda, he's like, with running, no one really cares at the end of the day. Like, yeah, you win or lose and you lose some medals and they might care in the moment, but you're not really affecting anyone's life. It's not really a bigger purpose. Now, maybe this is the universe's way of telling you that you're meant to do something bigger. And like, I don't care what you put your energy into. I don't care if it's art or healthcare or whatever, figure something out and you got to, and use that energy for that, because obviously this was not meant to be. And then he said, and call me back when you're not a victim. And
So the first part of that is about mindset. Okay.
And it's mind brain training.
It's brain training. It's getting yourself in a positive space. Right. And that's a whole subset of things of getting quiet and having positive messages come into your life and getting out and setting a goal. There's a bunch of stuff around that. But once you do that, and now you're in a very, you know, calm, quiet place, you've got a positive mindset, like, how do you shift that towards like really zeroing in? I think that's always the big catch 22 with a lot of people, right? Where like, gosh, I know I can do something great. I just don't know what to do.
What it is.
Yeah. And so really trying to hone in and identify. And that's where I'm trying to dig down from you and extract. Like, when you start talking about teaching people how to think, there's multiple levels. And you just talked about one of them, which is headspace, right? And positivity. So now you get down to the tactics of like, where can I really zero in?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think one of the things that most people struggle with is like, well, what is it? And I think there's this pressure, and I see this especially with undergraduates as well, because they're in the same position, right? They need to figure out what they need to do with their lives. Yeah. And there's this pressure that everybody thinks that they need to, like, what am I passionate about? Or how do I manifest this energy? What should I be doing? And I think it's less, I think you're putting that kind of pressure on yourself of getting quiet and being like, okay, what's the one thing I should be doing? Is going to just purely, very few people know that. And it's going to, and most people don't even know the options of what could be done. Like, what I'm doing today wasn't even a thing. So I couldn't have manifested that in my head. So I think rather than trying to figure out what that it is, you need to think about, what do I want my life to look like? Like, literally, what do I want my calendar to look like? My daily life? Do I want to live in a big city? Do I want to be a 9-to-5 job? Do I like to sit at a desk? Do I like to move around? Do I like, you know, construction? Do I like kids coaching? Like, what is it that I can see myself doing? It might not be the right thing, but that will lead you down a path, because you can be the most passionate or really good at, you know, whatever the skill is. But if you hate the environment around you or you hate the people around you, it's not going to work. So I think trying to figure that out first like, man, see what you want your life to look like first.
Yeah, you know, I really love what you said. And I was, as you were saying that, I was thinking about my situation. And this was now a year and a half ago or so. That's exactly what I did. It's like, what do I want my life? And I really pinned it more from a lifestyle first than an occupation second. So yeah. My lifestyle was, I want to be in the mountains, right? And so I moved my entire life to Sun Valley, Idaho, small little town, 3,500 people, you know, in the middle of Idaho, right? And that has allowed me to go up and down the mountain every day and train for Everest and these other things. And I am an executive for Sports Illustrated, and it's great that I can do that. But it wasn't driven by Sports Illustrated. It was driven by what I like to do, you know, in the morning, at night, being out there with the birds, chirping away. And other people, I've got two daughters that would love to move to New York. You know, I'm sitting here today in LA as we broadcast this, but they'd love to be in New York City just with all that energy. And that's great, you know, and we all evolve. And over time, things can change and that plan can change. But I think, you know, at least for me, what you're saying is like, what do you want your life to look like? And then you can start to fill in the blanks based on what your answers are.
Exactly. Exactly. And like, just even just talking about, like, you're talking about your daughters wanting to be in New York now, right? Well, it's a very different conversation if you were like, well, what exactly do you want to do though? What do you want to do? And I've seen my students, like, because there's a lot of them as well, especially business students that want to go to New York. And I'm like, just get there. Just get hired. Just get a job. You'll figure it out, because you're not going to stay with your first job. That's how you have to just get there. You have to make the connections. You have to figure out what works and what doesn't. Opportunities will present as you get there, but you just got to get there. You got to figure out where you want to be.
So how do you then go from all this navigation and going through and mindset and everything else to somehow or another be in a position where UCLA brings you in, and University of Texas at Austin now brings you in to teach the different students? In what capacity is that, and in what ways has that been rewarding for you?
I'm in a very, very lucky position. I was very lucky to get a professorship at this age, and without a PhD, and not without controversy, I'm sure. But I saw something. So I did a few guests. I did a lot of speaking when I had my own business. And at the time, it was a professor. He's actually at USC now, but he was at UCLA at the time. And he had me come in. He was a business school professor, come in and speak a little about it. And we became friends, and he wanted to write a book, and he wanted me to co-author it with him because I had more actual industry experience on it. And then he vouched, he was like, you know, we really need, like, I looked at a lot of the curriculum. He's like, there's nothing that any tenured faculty is teaching because it's so new and things take so long to get processed or whatever. And I said, I could create this curriculum. And he was like, yeah, like, good luck. Like, it takes a tenured professor 10 years to get a curriculum accredited. But I think also that if you just, you can't ask them that you're going to do something. You just have to do it and then show them the finished product. And that's what I did, was, okay, here it is. It's ready to go. Because it's one thing to pitch it and then they're like, okay, yeah, no, thank you. But once it's ready, and he was a godsend, and he let me, he put his name behind me and had me co-teach as a co-instructor first, which, you know, he's an extremely respected, older man. And he taught me a ton. And he's a hard professor and a hard-nosed guy in general. But I learned a lot from him. He ended up backing out of the book and giving it to me solely. Which then ended up I put it on pause for a couple of years. And now it was supposed to come out right now, but now we're on pause with the COVID. Yep. But because of him, he got me into that space. And then you're right. In terms of rewarding, like, it was the first time, like, in my life, and not that I didn't love doing the fitness stuff and love, you know, helping other brands, but it was the first time that I realized, like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. And you know, they told me that I could teach as much as I want or not teach and just be on, like, just develop curriculum. And I will now never not teach, I think, at least one class, because it's so rewarding. And it keeps you young and inspired. I came to UT because UT last year got a massive funding from Apple, and they're investing in a lot of the cutting edge new curriculum in the world. They also have a special center that relabels and relicenses curriculum for other institutions around the world. And so that was really my niche and how I got in there. They have an incredible team. They brought in some really different rock stars in different categories that is just so different. They brought in, well, I know that the press has gone crazy, but they brought in, like, there was eight of us new. Matthew McConaughey was brought in. And then, you know, we've got a massive Hollywood producer. We've got, you know, this woman that does, she's like the lead in VR virtual reality in the world. So they really, Apple brought some really interesting people there. So it's kind of been a real trip this year to be a part of it and the opportunity that we're now given.
Well, it's all about opportunities and it's all about what you do with those opportunities, right? And
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of this is all about being the best possible version of yourself. And that's what I think, you know, again, going back to ground zero, starting off a small little town to, I mean, if you would have ever said to yourself many years ago, you're not that old, but, you know, could I see myself from the time that you goes back to the small town, Canada, as a professor at University of Texas in Austin, you'd have said, like, you're crazy. I mean, you would have seen that way. So it's really opening up your mind to possibilities and then going for them. I mean, I don't think there's anything that somebody can't do, but again, it takes the ingenuity and the drive and the motor to get after it and get things done. And that's a lot of what I've been able to do. It's not because I'm the most talented guy in the room, for sure. It's only because I'm the guy that steps out the door, and a lot of people don't.
I think that's probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned in general is, like, everybody has the opportunity. Too many people don't realize that they have the opportunity because they don't go for it, or they think that it's too big for them, or that, you know, when they get to this level, then they could do that, or when they get, but just go for it. And there's, you know, you'll learn along the way. So that, for me, that was a big learning lesson. And now I think it's become a theme. And it's been a theme in my career in terms of every time someone says, no, it's going to take you 5 years, you know, to do this. Or, you know, I remember with Trium Entertainment, they're a big Hollywood company, and I was a YouTuber, and they're like, how are you going to get these guys as business partners? And so it almost becomes like a, oh no, there's a way. And the way is always figure out what your target is, whether it's a person or a brand or a company, and figure out what matters to them, what is going to drive them, what are their motives, and how can you help them achieve that? Because no one wants to partner with you for a handout.
Yeah, no, it's great advice. It's, yeah, I mean, I think that's really a lesson of life, is figure out what people want and go after it, right? And fulfill that. That's it. That's pretty simple, right? So yeah. Where can people find you if they want to connect in with your phenomenal knowledge and guidance?
Oh, yes. So my website is currently being, it should be done in a day or two, but it's Amanda Russell, two S's and two L's in Russell, .co.
Cool. Amanda Russell.co, right?
Yeah.
And we'll put that in the show notes. And, you know, I mean, look, you're an inspiration for people that are trying to think about what they're going to do. Again, going back to the day and age that we sit today, which is COVID-19. And, you know, there's a lot of heartache, a lot of people that are sick, a lot of people have lost their jobs. And, you know, if that's what has happened to you, know that, you know, you got to figure it out and you got to get up. And the best thing you can do is walk out that door and go after something. And we will get back to where we were and try to figure out what can be even more better than what you had, you know, previous to when this whole thing happened, right? And I think that's the whole magic key. So, listen, thank you so much for coming on the pod. You've been awesome, and look forward to sharing this with the planet and getting it out there, and continued success for you.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's funny, now next time I have to interview you for your story.
Yeah, anytime. So, okay, listen, thank you so much. And we'll get this fired out to the world, okay?
Good. Thanks. Thanks so much. All right.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.